Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to another episode of the Self-Build Plus podcast, where we chat with self-builders, suppliers, and experts about all things home building and renovating in Ireland on both sides of the border. I'm Astrid Matson, your host and the editor of Self-Build Magazine.
Today we'll be chatting with Ronan and Laura Campbell, whose home is on the cover of our winter 2022 edition of Self-Build Magazine. They managed to build themselves a house in Dublin on Ronan's parents' driveway. Thanks for joining us, guys. And we might as well start at the beginning. So tell us all about how you got to the point of being able to build this laneway house.
Hi, Astrid. Thanks so much for having us. Yeah, well, we were based in Canada in and around 2017, and we really did want to move home. And we spoke to Ronan's parents, who did have quite a big driveway, and asked them if we could possibly build in what really is an infill site on the grounds of their current home. And they said yes, like if we could get planning permission, that we were welcome to build in what really is a laneway house at the side of their current home.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because oftentimes with self-builds, it'll be a plot of land you're gifted or something. This is like quite literally, yeah, a plot of land really that you're gifted. Yeah. So it's
a plot of land in a side garden as well. Just, I suppose, like in terms of it's less driveway. I suppose we share the driveway, but it's more that it was the kind of like a large back garden as well. So we kind of just, it was a very misshapen site that we're able to kind of plonk this, I suppose, this new house under.
And we had been very inspired during our time in Canada. Like laneway housing, it's a huge thing over there. It's not as big of a trend here in Ireland, which is a real pity. But we'd been inspired by an architecture company in Calgary called Studio North, who have an amazing array of laneway style housing. And, you know, we had the opportunity at an open house to go and visit one of these. And we had seen like what they could achieve in a really small space and a misshapen space as well, which I think had we not seen that home, we mightn't have really had the vision for this house and this build. And so that really inspired us and got us thinking, well, you know, I think you need a lot less space than you actually think you do to have a home. Like looking at this plot where the house currently is, before the house was here, like you would never have thought that a 3-bed house could have fit here. And we were really shocked that it did.
Yeah. So how does it fit? Like, is it quite narrow than the plan and tall? Or how did you have to configure to, because it's a triangular site, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of misshapen from like a shape perspective. We actually ended up taking off a little bit of the original house just, I suppose, next door to us. So we were able to basically leverage that space. And it actually did end up being, I suppose, like it ends up as kind of very similar square footage, just you know, you wouldn't realize you could fit it there with all the angles of the site itself. So it ended up being just a rectangular house, just put down there.
Yeah. Okay. So then, yeah. So the way to maximize the space then is to go two story. How do you get two-story, all that floors? Yeah.
100%. Yeah. 2-story. We ended up having a bit longer on the, on, I suppose, the ground floor, to kind of really kind of extend out. So our bedroom, because it is an upside down house, our bedroom's at the back, and that actually extends past, let's say, the boundary of the first floor.
Right. Okay. So then how big is the house? It's how many square feet?
I think it's 127 square meters. Square feet, I think it's 1377, something like that.
Yeah. So that's, you know, by standards in new builds, that's fairly modest. It's enough, you're saying. Do you have kids or on the way, or what's the story?
No kids at the moment.
Yeah.
It's enough space. I definitely think, like, we have an open plan living room, open plan kitchen, and we definitely leverage that to actually maximize on the space. So I found, like, if we were to have walls, I think every room would be like a little box room that you'd be used to back in the day. Whereas the actual space we have now, we've got a bigger bedroom than we used to have in the house we rented. And the, let's say, bedroom two is bigger than a normal bedroom as well, I think. And then we have a small box room spare, which we use as an office at the moment.
Like, our architect had played a huge role in making the best out of the space that we did get. And, you know, he brought the design in where we had to, just to try and, you know, get across the line for planning. But to us, like, we did go to a lot of house showings before we started the build here. And, you know, just nothing excited us about the 3-bed semi-D flat pack houses that were available around Dublin. And, you know, a lot of times we were priced out of them as well. But we had some things on the list that were kind of non-negotiables. And, you know, we gave those things to our architect before he even started the design process. So to us, you know, you need a lot less space than you think you do. Like, we still have 3 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms, a walk-in closet, you know, and really it's just, you know, I think if the bigger the house you have, you just buy stuff to fit into it anyway. So, you know, at the end of the day, we got everything that we wanted that, you know, we mightn't have even been able to afford had we just bought a standard home here in Dublin.
Yeah. I suppose our focus was like minimal. So everything in the house is really black and white. And then, as we kind of, I suppose we've been in the house, what, 1.5, 2 years now? At the start, we hadn't bought anything. Laura's mentioned this to me earlier that, you know, for the first year, we only had really, like, we had the couch, the bed, and a couple of small things. We had the kitchen island. And then after that, we kind of just, like, realized, okay, well, you know, minimal is nearly, from our perspective, was nearly Spartan, right? Like, there was nothing in the house. It didn't have that level of warmth or, like, kind of, coziness that it needed to. So we kind of really focused on kind of bringing in those kind of more warmer tones, more, I suppose, homely feeling within the house, just with the carpets we added and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so it was a process of living in the house and seeing what was missing from it once you had your shell, then. So what were the non-negotiables when you mentioned that you talked to your architect and you're saying?
We wanted to make the best use of light. And that's kind of what brought us to, you know, the idea of having an upside down house. It's not something that you see a lot in Ireland, but, you know, as you can see, as the short evenings are coming in now at the moment, you know, we only have light for X amount of hours in the day, and we want it to be in our living space to enjoy those good hours of daylight. So we decided, like, the best way to do that would be to have the living space upstairs and to really maximize windows and light and
the white walls as well.
Yeah.
And the what? The white walls.
I know a lot of people are into doing, like, themes for their rooms, but, like, we only had a certain amount of space, and, like, we wanted the house to, you know, have a feeling that ran through it, you know, clean, open lines. So I think like maximizing light was our number one thing. Storage was our next thing. We don't like clutter, and it's always a big issue with open plan homes. So, you know, with our architect, we do have sneaky storage all around the house. We have, it was one of the things that we wanted, a washer and a dryer. We say like we're from New York, but we're really not. We really wanted a washer and a dryer. So our architect made a plan for those to be installed underneath the stairs. So we have like a bit of a utility closet in there. That was one. We definitely light space. We wanted 3 bedrooms, a walk-in closet, and like we wanted like a book room, didn't we, Ronan?
Yeah,
like
a reading nook. Like that actually ended up changing.
Yeah, we wanted a reading nook, which you know, as the build went on, that kind of changed because it turned out that Ronan was going to be working from home. So we kind of have a home office upstairs at the back of our living space, or at the front of our living space, really.
I think one more thing, and I suppose it became kind of an issue in the build, was we wanted a polished concrete floor on top and bottom, and potentially on the stairs as well. We love that polished concrete look. And then just with regards the actual build type with the steel frame, the polished concrete floor upstairs became like just nearly a no-go. So originally it was absolutely one of our essential requirements, and then it changed due to just basically the feasibility of doing that upstairs was nearly impossible, just with the depth of the concrete pour, the weight of the floor itself. So we had to kind of change away from that, and we didn't want to just change that upstairs and have a polished concrete floor downstairs with something weird upstairs. Given that it is the living space, there are hard floors, we couldn't just carpet a kitchen. So we ended up going for this micro cement, which we were able to kind of like, it's basically a very thin pour plastic concrete, and then we were able to do that all the way up the stairs. So like really the tone of the floor continues throughout the house upstairs and into the kind of main living space in the living area upstairs as well.
Cool. And just to go back to the planning stages, in terms of planning permission, were there any issues, or how to go with them, and did they put in conditions?
Planning, I suppose, definitely non-standard. So it was a non-standard build. I suppose we can see that in the pictures of the actual house, but it is secreted away down a cul-de-sac. So it gave us a bit of flexibility with the planning, and Mark, the architect, knew kind of the constraints that we were allowed to kind of leverage there. What we did find though, when we had submitted the original planning, was that there were additional planning requirements that we needed to satisfy. So I suppose two main planning requirements. There was heritage trees in the graveyard across the wall beside our house. So we needed to make sure they were protected. So we ended up having to put down a deposit of 7,000 euro for that, which was lovely to discover. And then we also had to do an arborist survey, like a tree survey, to basically say, you know, these are the trees, these are the cordons you have to build up, and this is what you need to satisfy. And then secondarily, because of those heritage trees, there was a potential for bats to exist in them, and bats are protected under, I think it's EU regulation to do with building. So we needed to actually satisfy that by doing a bat survey to confirm if or if not there were bats in those trees. And if there were, thankfully there weren't, but if there were, that would have caused additional complexity. We'd have had to satisfy other kind of requirements to make sure that if we were changing their flight path, that we would have to basically build a little house for them on our house, which is definitely a new experience.
Yeah, like we're really, really privileged to have heritage trees, you know, overhanging above the house, but the county council currently have 7,000 euro on deposit to ensure that those were protected throughout the build and that they weren't impacted by the build. And, you know, these are things that you don't initially budget for them, but it's a good lesson that you should have a little bit of emergency funds set aside before these builds, because there's exactly things like this that crop up. Like we hadn't even broken ground before we had to pay that out. So like it did come as a surprise to us, but it wasn't, from the council's perspective, it was something they couldn't budge on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully
we'll
have a nice little honeymoon trip next year.
So when are you
getting a long-term savings plan?
Yeah, exactly.
But when did you get your deposit back?
No,
it's 3 years. It's held for 3 years.
Okay. So
we're going to be getting a tree survey done probably, I don't know, maybe like July next year. And then I suppose from there, all going well, we'll get that return. So definitely a new experience. We asked for flexibility from the planning board, and they basically said no, there's absolutely no flexibility. This deposit needs to exist and stay. So like, even in the situation, like at the end of the day, like the planning folks are human. Like, I suppose that's the other side of it. There are these planning conditions, but at the same time, there is like ability through the architect to try and challenge a little bit in terms of, you know, how much flexibility do we have in these certain conditions? Like this might be overzealous. In this case, you know, it was a non-negotiable for them, but definitely was worth the swing.
And, you know, we were kind of adamant from the outset of the build that we would really like to stay as close as we could to having a passive build. So like, you can't have, you know, these environmental concerns and you want to have a passive build, and then on the other hand, decide that, you know, you're willing to let heritage trees die as part of your build. So,
absolutely.
We understood the process, and I think a huge lesson in that was, and something that I would recommend for anyone else starting the process, is get an architect on your team that understands how the process works and who has a lot of experience with scenarios like this, because I think, you know, Mark kept us calm when these things did come up during the course of the planning process. Nothing fazed him, and it really did faze us. So
yeah.
It was really handy to have him, you know, giving us that support in the background.
And architecturally, then the planners were okay with the sort of modernist design, because it was, you know, at the end of the cul-de-sac. Was that kind of how it went, or did you have to make concessions on that?
No, I don't. Like, in terms of design, we didn't have to make any concessions, really. It was mainly just all of the other things we had to satisfy.
Yeah.
In terms of the tree survey and the bat report, because it was put away, we just did have that flexibility. And the other side of it as well is, like, part of the plan itself was that the house was actually backset away from the line of the normal houses on the row, we'll say, right? So it was set back, I think, maybe a meter, 2 meters. You don't really see it, but because of that, when you're walking down the road, you don't initially see our house.
Yeah, that's kind of nice, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think that also helped kind of like allay the planner's fears.
Yeah, and the garden space, how big is your back garden then? So you had room to set back as well.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I think it's actually, I'll absolutely butcher this number, but I think the total site space is 250. So if it's 250 meters squared, 175, I think it's about 100 or maybe like 75 meters squared is the kind of back garden space.
Yeah, you do still have.
So it's big enough back garden, yeah.
Yeah. And then walk us through the next phases. So you got through your whole design, planning permission granted. So what happened next?
So next we broke ground.
Yeah,
around,
it was a mortgage, I suppose, first, and then.
Yeah, like we had to jump through, I think, huge hoops to get our mortgage in place. And I think Ronan's self-employed or as a consultant. So, you know, there was additional things that we had to do for that.
Yeah, so I suppose for my side, I didn't have the requisite like 3 years audited books because we just moved back from Canada, right? So we had our savings from Canada, and then we had, you know, I had a letter from my company basically saying, look, this is effectively a permanent contract. So we had to basically, like, thankfully Bank of Ireland were very flexible with us on that. So I suppose that's definitely positive, but due to that issue, like, we had to jump through, you know, we had to give consistent, you know, financial statements, you know, earnings, and pay slips for Laura and myself. It just made things a lot more complex. So I think that honestly cost us a couple of months. Like, we started the mortgage process as soon as we had planning permission. So you can't really apply for a mortgage for a new build until you have planning permission. There's just no point. The bank won't, you know, consider it until something exists from a planning perspective. So, you know, from there, I think we were approved in like March, April. And then from there, we actually ended up, like, it took us about the guts of, I suppose, until November. So the guts of 8 months to get approved for the mortgage. So prior to that, as it was kind of in progress, we did break ground. We put a I think it was about 15 grand of our own cash up front just to kind of really kick this off and get the groundwork done.
And there were no issues with the mortgage afterwards? Sometimes they like you to wait to, you know, to release the stage payments. That wasn't a problem.
So it actually was a problem, which obviously you can't plan for these things. But after the pandemic started and COVID broke out, we were between stage payments and we got in touch with the bank because our builder had said that he's ready for the next stage of the build. And we got a notification from Bank of Ireland that they wanted to put through a fresh request for information from us. So they needed, you know, new bank statements. And I guess at the end of the day, what they were looking for was to see if either Ronan or my employment position had been compromised in any way by the pandemic. So, you know, it kind of made us laugh at the time, though it wasn't really funny. But what they were getting at, and like I actually said this to them at the time, you know, we have half of a house built and we are paying a mortgage that has already been drawn down. So are you telling us that if either of us had been compromised by the pandemic in our employment, that, you know, you'd leave us with half of a house built and still renting? And they kind of said, yeah, like their risks had changed and they needed to sort of reassess us. So that wow. we were very lucky at the time that neither of us had been impacted by the pandemic. But, you know, I think there were days when both of us wanted to call Joe Duffy about this and have a chat because, you know, we had, you know, the bank would have been at that stage contractually obliged to fulfill their part of the bargain. You know, we had both signed a contract for a mortgage. So, you know, I would hate to think what would happen had either of us actually, you know, lost our employment or something because of COVID. But so we had to reissue new statements and, you know, we came through the other side and they did permit our next stage payment. But the pandemic, you know, caused other delays for us that basically set our bill back about 3 months.
Right. Yeah. So did the mortgage process set back the build or were you just kept going with the build, I presume, when you were sending in all your
papers? I think all the mortgage process really did was just stress us out, honestly.
Yeah.
It didn't really cause any delays. I was on the phone. I think they were probably sick of me talking to them as well. I was on the phone nearly every day trying to get every stage payment released, you know, on time. So I think my consistent pestering made sure that it happened. So in terms of delays, not really. I think the key delay was the actual, I suppose, the initial payment, right? Getting the actual mortgage fully approved. And then, you know, we did have to give a massive lump sum to get the kind of steel ordered. And that was, I think, about 150,000 of the whole kind of like mortgage had to be released. So that was the main delay. It was just the initial kickoff after groundworks were done. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was kind of like in parallel to the work being done during groundwork. So mm-hmm. No real delay on from the mortgage perspective.
We definitely, I think, would have to do a little bit more than your average mortgage applicant, though, because I think the bank are so not used to builds of the nature that our home was that, you know, they needed an additional level of comfort on why we needed so much upfront in our first stage payment.
Yeah.
That's not the norm for them. You know, groundworks wouldn't typically cost that much, but because I think in a build like ours, that's like a steel frame, there's a lot of upfront cost that they're not used to seeing. And sort of once we explained it to them and, you know, they kind of saw the invoice coming through from the builder, that kind of alleviated any concerns on their side. But I think it is a point just to note and be cognizant of if you're endeavoring to do something like this yourself.
Yeah. So you had an engineer sign off on the stages, I presume, for the bank to release the stage payments. So they would have had to vet everything, wouldn't they? Or an architect, or was your architect doing it?
Our architect signed off on it based on the kind of like builder spec on what they had said they'd do. Lovely scanning problems and all sorts of just days wasted with that as well. But I suppose like that's just filling in a form and then filling in the form correctly.
Mm.
So I suppose like really that's on the person filling in the form than it is I suppose, a delay on the bank side. So it was just more that they refused forms because they weren't clear, or they refused forms because a certain portion wasn't signed correctly or clearly. But that was standard enough.
Yeah. It really is a box ticking exercise, quite literally.
They're protecting themselves.
So in terms of the COVID delays, what were those? Was it getting materials? Was it the builders not showing up? How were you affected by it?
Yeah. Well, interestingly, we got a delay in our windows. So our windows got delayed at one of the ports. So we had ordered them in from Poland. They were all bespoke windows, because obviously in a bespoke custom build like this, that's sort of the nature of it. And they'd gotten delayed by about 3 weeks.
Yeah, three weeks. There was an issue on one of the windows that they produced originally. And because of that, it kind of just... it created this ripple effect, and then COVID occurred basically within that 3 weeks. Like, I suppose the intensity of, the COVID kind of like just, I suppose, becoming part of our everyday lives just flew in.
So the windows arrived on a flatbed truck in March 2019.
Terrible years.
Yeah, they've all blurred into one. They arrived the evening that Leo Varadkar came on the TV and made the first announcement that we were shutting down the country.
Yeah, that was 2020, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. So literally that happened that evening, evening that they arrived. So unfortunately, like when they arrived, the builders had no choice but to shut up the site. So the site was completely shut down, and then did stay down for three months, right?
I think it was about 8 weeks.
So
I think if the windows had have been in, right, I think if we had two extra days, right, so we got them on a Friday at 6 o'clock. Leo came on the TV at 8 o'clock that night, right? So we got the call. We were absolutely delighted. We could get cracking. If there is a lockdown, we'll have time to get the windows in. And I believe builders were allowed to work if it was within a specific building site confine inside or something like that. I think there was something with the regulations there. So if we had have had 2 days for them to put in the windows, they could have continued on working while the lockdown was in place. At least that was my understanding at the time. Mm-hmm. So 8 weeks, the windows are sitting outside the house, just cordoned off. Like we have one large window, and that was just sitting out there, and I was praying that, like, I don't know, there wouldn't be heavy winds or, anything like that, that would somehow, hit through the protective material around them.
Yeah.
But eventually then, I suppose the Ireland opened up and we were allowed to get back to work. And then, we were told 8 weeks to finish.
Mm-hmm.
Then we were told 12 weeks to finish 8 weeks after that. Just with, I suppose, different delays and also builder priorities as well, right? Like they had other jobs on at the same time. And I really think whoever is shouting the loudest with the builder gets their work done first. And I think we were living in Doolin, County Clare at the time with my parents, just because it was a better situation for us to work from home there. So we weren't on site as often, right? Yeah. We checked in every couple of weeks, but that was it. So, when work didn't, I suppose we were waiting for some sort of headway with plastering on the walls and that kind of stuff. And we saw that it wasn't done. And I think I just lost it that day. Like, I suppose that was the biggest day where, the frustration boiled over, because we've been waiting X amount of time for this plastering to occur. And we were told, everything would be ready in 8 weeks. Like, we'd be able to move in probably in, I don't know, June, July. And June, July came and plastering still wasn't done. Mm-hmm. So I remember just getting on the phone with the builder and losing my mind.
Pushing. That's something that we were warned about at the outset of the build from our builder. When you initially start a build, you see great leaps. So, you see the groundworks begin and finish, then you see the frame of the house arrive and go up, and everything seems to happen so fast. But it's at the end then when, the touches, you start doing the plastering, the windows go in, and, you see the finishing touches begin. And, people lose steam at that point, and that's just human nature. And our builder warned us about that. And he said, I think the main foreman on site said, he would make it his business to be on site as much as possible close towards the end of the build, because, the devil is in the detail. And that's unfortunately the point at which, builders get tired on a project and they start cutting corners. And that's the absolute opposite thing that you want to happen at the finishing stage.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So you guys were in Clare then, and your parents, were they? So
yeah, okay. There was a period of time there during the pandemic where we had half of a house built here on site, and then we were paying rent for a house that we weren't currently living in, paying a mortgage on the house that we didn't live in. And because there were four of us, including our two housemates, trying to work at the kitchen table during the pandemic, so we actually moved in with our in-laws for the duration of the pandemic. So we were on the other side of the country for 6 months.
Okay. But so who kept an eye on the site then with all that precious, those precious windows and everything? I would have assumed your parents would have been in the house next door, but if...
No, there wasn't really. I suppose like the folks next door kind of were texting us if there was any real updates, but because everything was just on hold, that's it, right? Like we were stressing about the windows because they were just sitting there, right? You've got about 20,000 euro worth of windows just sitting at the front, open to the elements, and you're just hoping that nothing goes wrong.
Yeah, like it's kind of like losing your glasses. You're hoping that whoever finds them doesn't have your exact prescription.
Yeah.
You know, the custom windows, they wouldn't really be of much use to anyone else who didn't have our exact build, but it was still like, it was very worrying to have that amount of product just on really what essentially is our front garden now. And, you know, they were just there for 8 weeks sitting, you know, the elements on top of them. But thankfully none of them broke while they were sitting out there.
That's good, obviously. Yeah, it could have gone another way, but that's good. So the building method choice, so walk us through that. You chose a steel frame, which is quite unusual. How did that process go?
Yeah, so I think that came kind of partially through the architect. So he'd worked with Chris and the, you know, Cappy Go Homes before. So he knew that it was a good kind of, I suppose, build method. There was kind of two main things though, right? Like cost was one thing. We put out a tender for the house because it was non-standard. People kind of, I think they just inflated the prices. They didn't have to do it. But we ended up getting tenders for maybe, I think it was like 400,000, 450,000. And at the time that was a gigantic shock because we were originally told, you know, 250 to 3 maybe. And then when we got the tender from
That was in 2019, wasn't it?
Was before everything went crazy. Just before everything went crazy. And then so Chris gave us a quote of 305, I think it ended up being, and we were very close to that in the end after, like, and that was all in, right? So it was steel frame, finishing, the whole shebang. From there, like, it was the other kind of real consideration was speed, right? So, you know, you have your normal standard build, your bricks go up, takes X amount of days to put the bricks up. You then have to roof the house, all that kind of stuff. You're talking weeks there. Our house was framed in 3 days, right? And that was a key consideration as well. So it was like, you know, you're spending the majority of the time finishing, which I suppose every build takes, right? Finishing takes forever. But the flip side was we were shortening the period where the actual framing was done. So we framed all the way up to the roof in 3 days. And it was absolutely amazing to see. Like, we were at that stage, we were next door seeing it go up. And it was just, it was absolutely gas because, you know, you're able to see the actual scale of the house, not just the design anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's super cool. So you mentioned the mortgage was a bit you know, apprehensive about that unusual like non-standard building method. Yeah. Even though it's like been used for eons, but was insurance an issue as well, or how did you tackle that?
Or was insurance for us, it wasn't an issue during the build itself. I think prior to actually getting insurance, I think I kind of noticed, like, we had originally planned a flat roof, right? The design was a flat roof and for upstairs. So, like, from my side of things, like, I personally didn't like the idea of having a flat roof just in terms of leaks. Like, there's a higher chance of leaks. And then because of that, then I did look into insurance on a house with a flat roof. And I called insurance companies and I got a quote from that side of things. And they were like, one of the questions they ask is your house more than, I think it's like 30% flat roof, right? And obviously ours was going to be 100% flat roof. So that would have just triggered a huge amount of issues. And that actually ended up being one of the best kind of, I suppose, outcomes that we could have hoped for, because we ended up going for this peaked ceiling. That's like the cathedral ceiling upstairs, which, you know, it just allows us to kind of feel like there's a huge amount of space upstairs because of that then. And then on the kind of the benefit with insurance then is we bypass that issue, right? Like we have a more standard peaked roof. And then, yeah, there wasn't any issue there. Really, it was just more about disclosing the fact that it was of non-standard build. So like with the steel frame.
Yeah. And then, so in terms of budget, keeping on track, you were saying that you basically did manage to stay within budget. Did you have a fixed price contract? How was that all managed on the?
Yeah, so we had a fixed price contract of, I think it was like 30. I feel it was like 305 and change. In terms of budgeting, like so that was set at the start of the build. That included all the finishes, included polished concrete, the whole, you know, build and I suppose finishing. From our side then, myself and Laura had a budget based on the mortgage and based on our savings that we had available to kind of finish whatever we needed to, right? So in terms of bathrooms, spending there and tracking all those. So like I basically had a line item in an Excel spreadsheet where, like, you know, we had the full bill, but then we had everything else, right? Like architect costs, you know, X amount. It was about 30,000 for an architect. And planning fees, I think it was about 6 or 5, not 100% there. But then there's all these other account, like, you know, budget considerations, like, you know, you have your service fees, you have to get electricity, you have to get water, you have to get wastewater treatment if you don't have access to that. And all those are like 2 grand and that adds up as well. So, you know, you start with, hey, it's going to be 305, but what it ends up being is actually it's going to be about 400, 450 because of all the things. Like, you still have to live in the house. You still need appliances. You still need, you know, your white goods. You still need tiling or, you know, paint on the walls, all that kind of stuff. So that all was added extra. And I was tracking it as we went then, as I paid it off, as we saved for it, as we kind of continued. So each line item became, like, it was striking by the end of it that we actually hit into the 400s.
Mm-hmm. I think one thing that the builder told us when we got an itemized breakdown invoice, basically. So if there was something missing from that invoice, we were going to be liable for it, and vice versa. You know, if there was something on that we noticed wasn't in the house, the builders were liable to cover that. So I think each party just needed to be very careful about and very explicit as to what was included in that itemized invoice. And, you know, I think there were points during the build where we noticed that, you know, the products that were listed on the itemized list weren't the same ones that were used as part of the finishing. I think one of those was, you know, the paint. We were very specific. We wanted,
Dulux.
Yeah, we wanted Dulux paint. We noticed that Dulux, they hadn't used Dulux for the house. And it turned out, you know, they'd just gotten a deal on a cheaper paint. So you need to be careful with things like that. Now, by the time we noticed, the house was already painted and, you know, it all worked out fine, but you do need to really micromanage, I think, especially closer to the end of the build.
Yeah. And I suppose one other thing as well is, like, Laura touched on, you know, the fact that an itemized list, the more itemized you can get the list, the better.
Yeah.
Like, builders will definitely shy away from that piece because, you know, that immediately puts it in writing. you know, that they're liable for this fee, right? So like knowing that inside out, having that clarified, understanding who is responsible for what piece of the build and who's covering X amount. So, you know, we had one piece, which was the stairs out the back, right? Like the stairs were fabricated, our only subcontractor in the entire build, right? And it was the only thing that went wrong and went badly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But that was separate. That was to be covered by us. And, you know, originally it was priced at maybe 10 grand for the entire stairs and fit. And then it ended up getting larger and larger because of all the different requirements to make sure it was structurally sound with the steel frame. Because, you know, there is significant weight with that stairs leaning on the house all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So there was like basically the supplier was like, look, that's not something I can sign off on until we put a steel post in and we, you know, anchor it different ways. And basically the kind of cost rolled up there. But again, that was a cost that we were taking. And it was really the only cost that really skyrocketed.
Right. And so how did you deal with the paint situation? Did you let it go because it had been done already?
I think it came down to reconciliation, right? So at the end of a build, you owe X amount by the end, right? So we had, let's say we owed them 20 grand. And then they're like, additionally, you owe us, I think it was like 15 grand was the quote in the end, which in fairness wasn't actually as bad as we thought it would be. But the flip side is, you know, there are errors in the course of a build as well, right? So like you're tracking those errors. We had a list of them. We had windows put in the wrong way. So our sliding doors open right to left. They should have opened left to right. And that would have caused significant delays on the build. So basically you have to keep score, right? What can you live with? And then basically what can you penalize the builder for? Or not penalize the builder. I feel like that's bad phrasing. But what can you get value out of in the end with that reconciliation process? So, you know, there's X amount of errors and then there's X amount of overspend and basically you just offset that. So like we got a quote for 15 at the end and I was like, well, okay, here's all the stuff that you owe us for in terms of the stuff that went wrong. And I basically went back with, here, I'll give you 2 grand.
Yeah, like there's...
We met in the middle then, really.
There's a level of haggling you can do at the end. You know, like we could mention to them, you didn't use Dulux, but at the end of the day, brilliant white is brilliant white. So
yeah,
it didn't
exactly.
it didn't break our hearts. But, you know, certain things we did say, you know, like that's not what we asked for. For instance, and this comes back to kind of micromanaging the build at the end. Ronan and I wanted to do like non-standard bathrooms. We wanted waterproof plaster on the walls instead of tiling. And we had wanted gray for the main bathroom downstairs and white for the ensuite. And when we did a site visit, we noticed that they had done the ensuite gray and the main bathroom white, which just, that was not what we wanted. And you know, the plaster that we had bought was incredibly expensive, like even more expensive than tiling the entire rooms would have been. And that was something that, you know, we, even though we might have lost a couple of days in time, we insisted that they correct that. So you know, you're willing to let certain small things go, but other things, when things are non-negotiable for you, you really have to push through on them, even if, you know, your builder will get mad at you, and that's okay. Like our architect, Mark, told us at the outset of the build that by the time the build was over, you would hate your builder and you would hate me. Thankfully, it's not that bad. We have a really good relationship with both of them. But you know, you do get fatigued at the end of the process, but I think at the end of the day they understand, and if you talk to them in a way like, this is going to be my forever home, they get it. You know, they're in it as much as you are.
Yeah it is about communication, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, your builder and your architect are a partner in the process. Like there's no one person that's more important. You know, you're relying on them to deliver something that's going to be like one of the biggest parts of your life for the rest of your life. So, you know, it's to your advantage to keep them on side and not to annoy them too much, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. So then for the bathroom, who paid for the materials? If you say the plaster was really expensive, like did they have to pay for it, or how do you manage it?
Well, thankfully, Ronan, who is the building equivalent of Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man, had bought extra. So he had bought extra of the gray plaster and bought a little bit of extra of the white plaster. So they ended up having to redo both rooms. So I think they got like two coats of the plaster rooms.
It should have been three, but I suppose that directly impacted the quality of the finish in the room that was white, because it wasn't crystal white the way it should have been.
Like, to this day, I am sure I can nearly see gray coming through the white bathroom, which does annoy me. And I think one day we will have to change it, because I'm sure I can see a bit of gray coming through it. But again, this, we almost created that because we were like, wouldn't it be awful if they painted the rooms the wrong colors? We brought it into existence by thinking it.
We emphasized it multiple times, but it still failed.
Like, we actually were on site and wrote, you know, like on the paint pots, we wrote white plaster ensuite on every single bucket. But the best laid plans at the end of the day.
But in the end, they actually ended up, like, that was part of the negotiation piece, right? In the reconciliation, I was like, look, the finish in those rooms isn't up to par. You wasted a third of our product.
Mm.
The product cost X. Therefore, you know, I'm offsetting it by that.
And they absolutely wouldn't fight on us, because at the end of the day, we were right, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So again, I suppose it's keep track. No matter what, things are going to go wrong. I think so much went wrong. I think at every stage, a supplier messed up an order. Like, every single opportunity they did. And you just have to get used to the fact that people are just going to mess up stuff. And you have to be okay with the fact that, like, you will be reacting and making quick decisions and shouting down the phone at people to kind of get their act together. But at the end of the day, like, it is time. That's the thing. Like, if you have time, you're okay.
Yeah. It's hard to do when you're working full time, for sure. So what happened with the stairs then? Give us a little, if you have the energy for it.
I'll go on this. So basically, the stairs had to be bolted into the frame of the house, right?
Yeah.
Because of that, I suppose the side of the house and like the air tightness barrier and everything like that had to be cut. Then there was delays with the stairs being, what do they call it? Coated? Like, whatever they...
Yeah.
Like, coated in black. Basically, the stairs are like matte black, so they had to be coated specifically. So there was delays there. So the stair area was wide open for about 3 weeks during, like, intensive rain.
And the stair provider arrived on site with the stairs when they were actually finished, under the assumption that our home was a regular block build and not a steel frame. And when that happened, they had to go with the stairs, and like, the builders had to come up with a way to like attach the stairs to a non-standard, non-traditional build. And, you know, of course, we would have sent them our plans before they had even put the stairs into process, because it was a huge chunk of change to get that stairs made. But, you know, at some point in the production, either those plans fell away or they forgot that the house was a steel build. So, you know, it was never envisioned that we would have, what is it, like a support structure built?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, so basically nearly like a support column built, had to be cast into concrete. Like, whole dug, cost time, cost, that had to be, you know, powder coated as well, finally found the word. And then I suppose the other side of it as well was there was a lack of responsibility then, because, you know, we had our builder saying, hey, I sent you the plans. We had our architect saying, you know, XYZ. And then we had the actual stair supplier basically being like, well, this isn't safe. I'm not putting my name to this. You guys messed it up because you didn't tell me. And then I was on the call to all of them being like, can we just get this done? Like, that took us, honestly, the stairs took us about 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, it should have been a day. It should have been the stair install day. Everything was done. But because of all the back and forth, all the issues, all the unforeseen kind of circumstances, took us 6 weeks and an extra, I think, about $7,000, which we ended up having to foot the bill for that.
Yeah, we did.
Again, that was, you know, the column wasn't kind of our wasn't in the original plan.
Ronan basically had to arbitrate between the architect, the main builder, and then the producer of the stairs, because there was a certain point at which those three parties were not talking to each other. And like, unfortunately, you know, when you're doing a self-build like this, there are times when you have to step in and act as like a pseudo project manager just to get something over the line. And that really was the case with the stairs. The stairs broke our heart, really. That was... Yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, the day that the stairs were due to be put in the first instance, you know, they drilled a hole in the roof of our bedroom in order to fix those stairs. And that was just open to the elements for 3 weeks while they got their act together. So like rainwater went in, there was a flood, and, you know, I think we both have PTSD about getting like water damage in the house after that, because, you know, you think, well, there's water damage in it, it's never going to be the same. But thankfully, we haven't had any issues.
No, it was sorted in the end. I think they had to redo the plastering in the bedroom on like where the kind of water had gotten in. And once it was sealed up, everything was fine. But yeah, that was one of those stressor situations.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, I think it could have been handled if, I don't know, better project management overall. I think that's one of the kind of learnings I had, is like, I wouldn't let them off with as much. I'd take full reins if I was to do that again.
Yeah. Make sure everyone understands fully what's expected.
Yeah, and duties as well. I think that's the key. We were grand with the architect and the builder, right? We had the majority of duties outlined there. One of the things we didn't have was like a BRRRR plan or a BRRRR rating and kind of a plan for that. That just fell off the wayside. So we're still trying to get that sorted, Astrid. We couldn't have that ready for the article because nobody just thought about that during the course of the build. And then afterwards, it's too hard to get the information out of everyone.
I'm assuming the architect filed your commencement notice, they would have had to put in a provisional building energy rating, I would assume.
Yeah, it would have been an A based on plan. Like, and
had the provisional.
We're just trying to certify the windows.
And when, like, because having a very warm house was important to us, like you do have to have a couple of airtightness tests throughout the build. Like, when the house was complete, we did have an airtightness test. And I think the company that did it actually thought the machine was broken because the airtightness was so good in the house. They had to do it a couple of times. And we're like, nope, it genuinely is good.
It's in good shape.
Yeah. And so are you going to be able to, you have to be able to get an energy rating. Sure. Can't they just figure it out from all the specs?
Like, yeah. If you get the window quality has to be of X. I think I think there's, you know, the NZEB or whatever, the regulations that came in. We predate those. The issue is we don't have any building certs for the windows, and we're trying to get it off the builder, and I'm just kind of getting crickets on that. So I suppose that's been standing for the guts of a year. So I'm trying to figure a way to, whether it's get onto SEAI for an exemption on the kind of requirement for the windows, and just put in default ratings for the windows, and we'd still be an A. So that's what I'm dealing with right now. I'm just trying to get that squared away. That's the only really kind of outstanding item, because that'll help our mortgage too.
Yeah, geez, it's mad to think, like, you're in nearly 2 years, isn't it? You're still dealing with all that stuff. And I have your deposit back for the $7,000.
It would be more of an issue, I think, if we were going to sell the house, you know, but we don't plan to right now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, technically, you're meant to do it even if you're just living in it. But, like, obviously, I'm sure they have exemptions
I'll do that straight away.
Yeah. No, I'm sure they, you know, as you said, they are human as well. I'm sure they understand there are things that are complicated. So any other tips and advice to others? We covered a whole lot, but in case we didn't cover the last little bits.
I think one of the things that I've taken away from the process is, you know, you shouldn't be afraid to take design risks. Like, even if you don't know anyone else, for example, that's done something, but you have a vision for your house. Like, we had never met anyone else who had, you know, waterproof plaster in their bathrooms, for example. But we really wanted to push for that contemporary feel in the house. So we just went with it, and we did take a risk on it. And, you know, it's one of the things that, you know, anyone who comes to visit the house says, wow, like, that's really different and it's really nice. And, you know, it really is pulled off in the house and it keeps it really modern. So I think something like that.
Yeah. So where did you source it? How do you have to go to the UK for it?
No, that was actually, I think it was Tile Style.
Tile Style. And it had to be ordered in from Italy, was it, Ronan?
Yeah. I think it's an Italian company that makes those. So that was one. That was great. Like, it took a bit of time to get it, but I think it was well worth the kind of finish that we got in it.
And a standard plasterer was able to follow the instructions and just mix it up. And, like, you didn't need a specialist.
I think it was like three or four coats, but it got there in the end. So that was standard enough. And then I suppose another piece of advice really is, like, you're going to get very little notice to make a decision. So there will be, you know, through the course of the build, there will be a deliverable that's due that day, right? We're doing this today, whatever it is, X amount. We're plastering or we're framing this way. And you'll need to make a decision on the spot. And that decision will potentially either haunt you for the rest of the time you're in the house because you're going to know about it, or you have to be okay with making those decisions really quickly on the spot. So I think one thing that myself and Laura benefited from was just being on the same page as to what actually mattered, right? For us, what mattered was clean lines and light, right? And our concrete floor. Our concrete floor went by the wayside due to just physical feasibility. So we kind of replaced that. But, you know, you need to know, is this a battle worth fighting for, right? And make those quick decisions and be okay with making a quick decision. Like,
yeah, you have to pivot because, you know, if you sit around taking time to make certain decisions, it's going to delay.
They're just going to make the decision for you and move on with your life. So it's like, you know, you'll get told stuff, oh, this feels like a disaster. Like you'll get news and you're going to interpret it as everything is burning when really it's just, hey, what color do you want the walls?
Yeah.
Right. Or, you know, like the way it's communicated to you is going to be direct. And the way you interpret it has to be, okay, well, what else do I need to know? Or can I just make a decision based on the information I have available to me right now?
And I think the final thing that we read this, I think Ronan read it in Self Build magazine years ago, was that if there's two of you doing a self build like this, one of you needs to take primary responsibility for the build and everything related to the build. And that person was Ronan. Like Ronan micromanaged the build from start to finish. And he would make smaller decisions and not refer them back to me, but anything that he thought was a major decision, then he would bring it to me. You know, you don't want to have, you know, two people on the same build emailing back and forth. Ronan was like their main contact person. He made an email address for the build for any vendors and service providers to email to. And that basically, you know, he maintained that. And having that primary person as a point of contact is really, really useful.
Yeah.
And you don't want them to be, you take one decision, you don't know if the other took a decision. Yeah. It gets crosswires fairly quickly if you don't have that.
I think the way we dealt with it was anything like standard or physical or, you know, just based on, like, I suppose, framing or getting the house up, I just kind of managed. And then anything that we would be seeing physically, you know, like whether it was a design decision
cosmetic.
Or whether it was, yeah, cosmetic, exactly. Yeah. That's where I really brought Laura in and was like, look, these are our two options. You know, it might be hard to imagine X or Y. These are the two options. This is what the outcome of those options would be. What do we want to do? Right. And it's like, I think we go this way. And then Laura would be like, actually, yeah, that'll look better. Or no, completely disagree. It'll look better this way. And that's how you deal with it, right? So like one project manage, the other be like the cosmetic expert, the designer, I suppose, is what kind of Laura was in that case.
Yeah, and then I think finally we moved into the house with just a couch and a bed. And you really don't have to front load the design part of the house. You know, like once you're in the interiors, all that stuff will come after. You want to get the feel of the house before you start doing all of those added extras. And
yeah,
that's like we're to this day still doing small things to the house. It's been 2 years, you know, and, you know, you want to do small changes over time and fill the house very slowly with things that are meaningful to you and not spend a ton of money at the outset getting too excited about the house with him. And you're going to pick things that just don't suit the house.
Yeah. 100%. That's great stuff. Well, listen, guys, thanks very much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Emily, for having us on.
Join us next time for more tips and advice from experts and self-builders alike. And if you haven't already, subscribe to Self-Build Plus. It'll give you full access to the selfbuild.ie website, including the Self-Build Plus journey, which is your step-by-step guide to self-building and home improving. Your membership also gives you first access to all videos and podcasts, as well as access to our members-only Facebook group, which features regular Facebook Live events.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.